T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Football fans, the NFL draft is almost here, and the free Odyssey app brings you the latest coverage from the biggest sports radio stations across the country. Which players will help your team the most? Who will make a draft day trade? Will they be ready for week one? The local conversations about the team you love. All streaming free right here on the Odyssey app. Audacy. Download it today.
Off our third hour on Grant and Danny, shall we? It is noon, which means we welcome in our audience in Richmond now. Grant and Danny on the Fan, brought to you by Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance. We've got a juicy blitz covering three big stories today in sports, so we got to get right to it. Let's start you off on the hardwood. Wizards getting ready for the draft a couple of days away. Before we get into the Wiz, though, Chris Miller, NBC Sports Washington, to help us chase down some of the crazy storylines in the NBA player movement window. So, Chris, give us some of the blockbusters here, some of the biggest news you've been following. What stands out as who's won, who's lost to this point? What are we seeing?
Good to talk to you guys. I think the Phoenix Suns won, getting a guy like Chris Paul to now be paired up with Devin Booker. Amazing deal to get done. Paul at 35, I think, is the first ballot Hall of Famer, but to get a point guard there with Booker is a really good sign. I think Drew Holiday going to Milwaukee is a strong, solid piece. It might not be a sexy piece for people, but when you think about what Drew Holiday offers to Chris Middleton and Giannis Antetokounmpo, it's stability on both ends of the floor for a guard that can play both positions. So those two have really stood out to me. The James Harden stuff to Brooklyn seems like a lot of soap opera, and if it happens, I don't see that team winning a championship. Just too many guys that want the basketball, but it's really cool for the clicks and page views today.
Yeah, that's what I wanted to ask you about, Chris. Is that, to me, is it, I just kind of shake my head at that, at that entire saga. I'm not mad at anybody. I don't know. I don't know how to feel about Harden demanding this trade to one team only, which hamstrings Houston, and it just kind of stinks. There's not much that I enjoy about this entire saga. What do you make of it?
Nothing really excites me about it, because it's just Harden dominates the ball so much, and I can just see Kyrie Irving or vice versa looking at each other in December going, I hate your guts, right? Like, I just don't like playing with you because you won't share the basketball. And then Kevin Durant would be like right in the middle going, What did I sign up for? It's just, it's too much.
So you don't seem to, I mean, I'm with you. You don't seem to think that's actually happening. It's kind of silly season type stuff. One thing that doesn't make a lot of sense to me, and I get contending teams wanting to get over the top, are first round picks worth nothing anymore, Chris? I mean, can you educate me on this? It seems like they just get thrown into these deals two and three at a time. It's crazy.
And then these pick swaps. You know, you're learning a lot by watching a lot of these moves. But to me, call me old school, call me the old guy, get off my lawn. But I still believe in building a team through the draft and the ability to develop that player, retain that player, and having aspirations of winning championship with that player. But, you know, Oklahoma City has kind of thrown that all out in the bathwater, because now, you know, I think they have 147 draft picks in the next 3 years. And it's like, what do you do with those, right? But I understand in a market like Oklahoma City, where you probably will not get big-name free agents to go there, you need to make sure that you have a war chest of draft picks. But I just don't think that's sustainable for success in this league.
Dinosaur Miller joining us on the Beltway Blitz, Chris. I love it, that old-school mentality. Real quick, who might the Wizards target at 9? Obviously very dependent on what happens in front of them. Deep draft, there's a lot of needs they could fill. What are you hearing and what do you think?
I think there's some value picks. I don't think you're going to be wowed by franchise game-changing player at 9, but a piece that will definitely be heavy in the rotation of playing. Onyeka Okongwu from USC is my favorite. I see a lot of Bam Adebayo in this game. I love the fact that the kid cares about defense first. He's a pick-and-roll threat. Devin Vassell, that's two S's and two L's from Florida State, is definitely another wing prospect that I think the Wizards could look at. But, guys, it's all about defense to me. In my top five players that I have Okongwu, Jalen Smith from Maryland, Devin Vassell, Isaac Okoro, and Precious Achiuwa. Four of those five, you know, as soon as they get off the bus, they're trying to lock in defensively. The Wizards need to get a young player that cares about that side of the ball first.
I could listen to Chris Miller talking hoops all day long. Thank you, buddy. Good talking
to
you. And we will chat soon.
Great talking to you guys, too. Have a great week.
It's a fun time for basketball fans. Draft is Thursday night. Let's move along on the Blitz, talk some baseball. Kyle Glazer of Baseball America joins us on the Beltway Blitz. Kyle, Grant and Danny here in D.C., thanks for a few minutes. Let's start with the names on the Hall of Fame candidates list that came out yesterday. Not quite as beefy as we've had in recent years, huh?
No, there definitely was not like a huge influx of first-time candidates this year like we see a lot of other years. So this might be the year we see some of the guys who've been waiting finally get in.
That's what I wanted to get to. There are Hall of Famers that are not in the Hall of Fame due to, you know, some of the old guard and their quest to, you know, re-legislate and litigate whether those guys should have been allowed on the field or not. And I have my issues with it. You can probably tell by the question. But do you think any of the guys that should be in the Hall of Fame get into the Hall of Fame this year?
I think this is possibly the best chance. I'll say this, you know, Curt Schilling, who the reason he's not in the Hall of Fame is not because of steroids. It's, you know, because of some other things he said. I think this is the year he gets in. You know, he got to a 70% last year, I think, without too many other main candidates on the board. I think this is the year Curt Schilling gets in. You know, then Bonds and Clemens are next. You know, both of them got over 60% last year. I think, you know, again, if they get in on the writers' ballots, I think this might be the year.
At 60%, they need to get to 75%. Some other of the names that, you know, aren't anywhere near the 75, but Omar Vizquel, fourth time on the ballot last year, got to 52%. Scott Rowland, fourth time on the ballot to about 35%. All right, Kyle, there was just some breaking news out of Major League Baseball. We don't have a lot of details yet, but I just wanted to get your reaction to something that came out at the top of the hour where the Cubs are apparently announcing that Theo Epstein is stepping down as their president of baseball ops. Jed Hoyer is going to take over. Maybe a thought on Epstein and the job he's done there, and then also Hoyer as an executive to lead the way. He's a longtime accomplished guy, clearly.
Yeah, this was definitely a bombshell this morning. Look, Epstein, under his watch, or his main watch, I should say, the Cubs made the playoffs five times in the last 6 years, got to three NLCSs and won a World Series. This has been a historic run for the franchise, and he and everyone else deserves a lot of credit. Look, Jed Hoyer has also been a big part of that. He's an accomplished GM who's done a lot of good things. And this was a transition people expected to happen. They just didn't expect it until next year when Epstein's contract ran out. This transition isn't what's surprising. It's the timing of it that it's happening right now. That's surprising.
Is he going to the Mets?
You know, this is so new. There's potentially, you know, Mets opening. There's potentially a Phillies opening. Right now, we're trying to figure out what the heck just happened. He's going to be with the media later, so I think it's a little early to speculate on that considering this news came down in less than 3 minutes ago.
Yeah, it literally came down right before you hopped on with us. All right, Kyle, before we let you go, let's talk Nats for just a second. They had a really disappointing year. The core is strong with Trey Turner, Juan Soto, Scherzer, Strasburg, Corbin all coming back in the rotation. You know, if you were them and you were going to throw money at a bat or you were looking at a way to maybe solidify yourself as a playoff team again, what would your blueprint be? What would you try to do this offseason?
That's tough. I mean, I think they need to go get a first baseman. That's first and foremost. I think they need to really look and see if they really believe in Victor Robles' bat because, you know, it has not been what you want to see. Maybe you go sign George Springer. You can stick him in right if you want. They need better offensive production than they got. And I think really almost anywhere outside of Trey Turner and Juan Soto, they have to be open to upgrading.
Cal, thank you, buddy. Always appreciate the time, man.
No problem. My pleasure.
GP, we could talk some Washington football team here this week. We have we have one positive COVID test. Sounds like it's a guy that's on injured reserve, didn't travel with the team. So you're hoping that ends up just being kind of an isolated incident.
Yeah, let's get to the football team right now, formally. Pete Haley of NBCSportsWashington.com. So you give us the details on this, Pete. What do we know about this COVID case?
Yeah, certainly not the email you want to get in your press, in your inbox, a press release, but came from the team probably about an hour ago or so. One player on IR, like Danny said, didn't travel to Detroit and hadn't been in the facility the past couple of days. So hopefully the spread isn't too bad. For the rest of the week, they're going to be doing virtual meetings. That means no practices, it seems like. That means like seems like the media won't be out there either. But if it's a guy on IR who hasn't been around much, then you hope that this is just a one-time thing. The game can go on this weekend. So it's tough timing, but Washington's done a really good job of being COVID sensitive. I think Ron Rivera having cancer certainly played a role in that. And for them to make it to November 17th and have this be the first in-season positive test is commendable, even if it is a little alarming too. I wouldn't be too nervous yet or too scared yet if I was a fan or someone tied in with the team.
Pete, what percent chance would you give Alex Smith starting five or more games for the Washington football team next year?
I would give it, I'll do a little tribute to Alex. I'll give it 11% to match his jersey number. I think if you want to do week one, week two, week three-ish around there, then I would up my percentage quite a bit. But I could see him just being a bridge and not necessarily a long bridge, like a bridge over a creek, not a bridge over a giant lake or a giant river of sorts. I think he's a perfect mentor, and I think he's proven that he can be a really good backup and a spot starter if you need him to be and if he wants to be. I mean, he talked about how he's really thought about his family, and when he was recovering and rehabbing, he realized how precious that time was with his kids. So I think Washington would want him back, but maybe it's more of would Alex want to come back. And if he is back in 2021, I still think they'll find a young passer in the first or second round, maybe let Alex be the guy to start, but transition pretty quickly to that next generation of quarterbacks.
Pete, Cam Sims played about 95% of snaps as the Z receiver, the number two to Terry McLaurin. Is this a thing? Is he going the rest of the way now this year as their second guy?
I would absolutely hope so, Grant. I like Dontrell Inman. I think he's been a nice piece, but there's no reason that he should play if he gets healthy again in the lineup, and I don't think anybody else deserves to play over Cam Sims. I don't know necessarily if he really is a real two in an offense. You probably want to get another guy or two next year to really fill out that receiving core, but he's a big player. He's got some speed. He can do some things after the catch, and he's tough to bring down. So Cam Sims really embodies what 2020 was supposed to be all about before the NFC fell off a cliff, and that he's a young player who didn't have an opportunity, but he's earned Ron Rivera's trust. He sees an opportunity, and he's showing that he can be an effective person in an offense if you need him to be. So I love Cam Sims. I'm happy for him. He's been grinding for a while. He only really produced in training camp, but now back-to-back games, he's been a relevant piece, and I think he can continue to get better. And kudos to him for maturing and really understanding what it takes to succeed in the NFL.
Pete, thank you, buddy. Always appreciate it.
Thanks, guys.
Pete Haley on Grant and Danny. That's how you blitz three deep today as we break down all the things going on in sports. Chase Young has been good. Anybody who watches him down in and down out will tell you he has helped. He has made an impact. But the numbers aren't there. The counting stats are not there. What gives? Let's talk about Chase Young's rookie season next. $12.45, our quarterbacking awards for Week 10. Who gets our gold, silver, bronze medals? Who gets our Jag of the Week? And who was the dud of the weekend in the NFL? All coming up at 12.45 when we talk QBs around the league on Grant and Danny. Before we get into Chase Young, 3.5 sacks in his rookie season as he gets ready to barrel down the stretch with 7 games to go. Antonio Brown got back into the league with the Tampa Bay Bucks, Danny. He's living with Tom Brady. I don't know if that's still the case, but he was at one point. They were roommates again.
It's the best.
And Antonio Brown is a changed man. He's more mature, and he's left all of his issues behind, and he is thankful for this opportunity. Oh, wait, I'm being told he was accused last month by the community in which he lives for destroying a security camera and throwing a bicycle at a security guard on October 15th, 1 month ago. The Miami Herald reporting on Monday that they cited a police report with some of these details. So this is in Hollywood, Florida. Police decided they had probable cause to charge Brown with criminal mischief. He could have been charged with a misdemeanor. But the president of the homeowners association where Brown lives declined to press charges, the Herald reported. According to the report, the president, Sylvia Berman, told police she feared Brown may retaliate against her employees, which is why she decided not to press charges against him. Berman told the Herald, "We're not afraid of Brown, but that Hollywood Oaks board decided the incident wasn't serious enough to press charges and that now Tampa Bay Buccaneers wide receiver agreed to fix the camera that was damaged." Antonio Brown, boys and girls, go Bucks.
The throwing of the bicycle is interesting. It's not your standard projectile.
He throws a bike. I mean, really? Who throws a bike?
I did a double read there just to make sure that I had it right. Didn't throw like a piece of the bike or like a bike lock or something. He threw the actual bicycle. I wonder if he did like you throw in the discus. You know what I mean? If you did a whirl or if it was just like kind of a one heave. How do you throw a bike effectively? And does it get your point across? Now you're just giving someone your bike, maybe? I don't know. But didn't sound great, and it sounds on brand for old Antonio Brown.
A statement for the spokesman for Antonio Brown says that Brown is concerned that he's routinely targeted by some people for mistreatment and undue scrutiny because he is Antonio Brown. He wants to be a good neighbor, a good citizen, and a good teammate. You understand, Danny, it's not his fault. He's not the problem.
He's
just living his life. Other people are the problem. So the league is now looking into this. He wasn't charged. I can't imagine anything will come out of it. The league continues to monitor a civil case in Florida where Brown is accused of rape. A hearing is set for January 11th on that civil suit, making it unlikely that the case is resolved before the season ends. According to Tom Pelissero, if violations of the NFL personal conduct policy come to light, Brown could face discipline. People were frustrated with me yesterday. I don't really know why. I tweeted out the story that Antonio Brown is, you know, dealing with this from a month ago, and I said, "Go Bucks." And someone said to me, they're like, "Why don't you like Antonio Brown?" Another guy's like, "What do you have against Antonio Brown?" Well,
what
other
don't you?
Than the last 3 years of how he's acted in his life and, you know, throwing one opportunity after another down the drain and constantly being in trouble with the law, not much, I guess. Other than that, he quit on the Steelers and then completely blew up his relationship with the Raiders and then made the Patriots look terrible and seems to in no way have changed at any point, and just keeps getting to play because he's good at football, I guess I don't have anything against him.
Other than that, you know, it is weird. It's this, like, I don't even know how to describe it, but if somebody, like, enjoys watching a player play, right, or versus if they don't, because I guarantee you everybody that was criticizing you for being annoyed about Antonio Brown probably has somebody that annoys them who's done nothing compared to the rap sheet of Antonio Brown. You know what I mean? Like, there's some quarterback for their team that threw an incompletion. I'm like, "This guy's a bum. I hate him." Just has, to my knowledge, never thrown a bicycle at anybody.
Well,
you know?
So here's the thing,
just
too.
Just so funny.
A couple. I shouldn't say here's the thing. Here are the things. So number one, whatever this term, I hate this term. I hate that I'm about to say it. But, like, I was a Antonio Brown stan for years. He was one of my favorite players in the league.
Same here, by the way.
Loved him. In fact, he was one of my favorite players all time. I don't mind, like, knuckleheads. Terrell Owens, as a kid, was one of my favorite players in the NFL. I mean, as dumb as this sounds, I remember writing a poem about Terrell Owens and how much I liked that guy in middle school age. I thought he was awesome. Signing a football with the Sharpie, like, that was cool to me. Same thing with Chad Johnson, Ocho Cinco, whatever the heck his name was. He worked really hard. He played really hard. I loved him. A lot of people couldn't stand his act, didn't like his dancing and his antics and his kiss the baby shtick and all that. I loved him. You play hard and you don't get in trouble off the field, I will love you. It's not that complicated. With Antonio Brown, he legitimately quit on the Steelers. And I remember all the dummies that said it was Mike Tomlin's fault. You know, Le'Veon Bell was mad at Mike Tomlin, and so how's that worked out for him, by the way, I'm sure. Antonio Brown just didn't show up. Remember that? The week they were playing,
that's
a
right,
Week 17 game to get into the playoffs, just didn't come to work. Dead to me until the end of time. You'll never play for me again. I don't care if I'm starting Dontrell Inman and Roydell Williams at 40 and name a Florida Gator who played for Steve Spurrier and I have $50 million in cap space. You will never play for me after that. But because he's great and a Hall of Famer and one of the best receivers to ever do it, the Bills try to trade for him, and that didn't work out. He didn't want to go there. Okay, fine. So now the Raiders bring him in. Ill-advised, but cool. His helmet can't fit on, or he refuses to wear a helmet, whatever the hell that was, if you remember that. Then he got into a screaming match with Mike Mayock, punted a football or something stupid, and now he can't play for the Raiders, so he's gone there.
He sandbagged his way out of there.
Didn't want to be there, so he just stopped showing up, so whatever that was, he's gone. Oh, I'm sure it's his, you know, it's the Raiders. It's just the Raiders, guys. John Gruden's a moron. It's Antonio Brown's not the problem. Okay, cool. So now he gets another shot where Tom Brady lets him live with them, and he comes to New England. And by the way, stories have come out in the meantime with harassment and assault and all kinds of issues with women and people in his neighborhood, nonsense off the field. At no point has he made amends. At no point has he acted differently online. He's just as volatile. He's calling as many people out and saying crazy things on social media. But he's back in the league with the Patriots for one game, and then that blows up in their face. And then he gets to serve a suspension while not in the league. He doesn't have a job, but he just serves his suspension. And yet again, Tom Brady brings him in to be his roommate and have breakfast with his family and eat pancakes.
Get open.
Because we love pancakes so much. And so he's sitting there with Tom Brady's kids, and they're all talking about their days. And now I find out this happened a month ago. I'm so sure. I'm extremely sure. I'm quite confident. So you're right. I don't like Antonio Brown. I think he's a jerk. You're right about that.
All I heard was how much of a hater you are. That's what I heard. It really is. It's, I don't know, man. Because everybody wants to make something else. They just want to ignore all the factors. That's what I will say. When I go, look, if you or I, you know, happen to not root for somebody or, you know, dislike somebody, there's got to be this one component, and that's why we don't like them. No. This is pretty simple. Just look at the body of work. That's all. There are too many people that do it right for us to tolerate people that do it wrong.
How many chances?
Pretty simple
do you get?
For me.
How many chances?
Seriously.
And honestly, Antonio Brown is the, I guess, conveyance for my energy here in the way that, like, you use a piece of turkey to get mashed potatoes into your mouth next week, which tastes better. But my issue in general, I guess, bigger picture, is when people keep getting chances that do nothing to warrant or deserve them. And there is nobody. You make fun of me, or you did years ago, maybe not anymore, but, like, for how much of a softy I am with second and third and fourth chances. I am the guy that will time and again and time and again and time and again give someone an opportunity and they'll make me look bad because I think you can repair yourself. There has been no attempt, from what we can tell publicly, for him to do
contrition.
This. And this latest incident, alleged incident, I'm giving him the benefit of the doubt that it didn't happen because he's earned that. This alleged incident in his neighborhood, not the first time he's had issues in his neighborhood, by the way, but this latest thing that he allegedly did was a month ago.
Yeah.
This is not Mike Vick giving speeches and telling you that he's a changed man who served time in prison and missed time in the league and came back as a backup and had to watch Kevin Kolb play football. That's not what this is. Come on. I sound like Joe Biden. Come on.
Come on,
man. I don't know, dude. I don't know what I don't know.
Yeah.
But I guess that's the answer to the question is, why aren't you rooting for Antonio Brown? Well, those are some of the reasons. That's the start. There's more, but we got other things to cover. Grant and Danny on 106.7 The Fan. Man, there are a lot of young wide receivers in football I love that I hope that they can become the next Antonio Brown and just
because before
on the field
all this,
be great.
The story was great. Grant, it was the dream.
God, I loved him. I loved it. He is.
That's part
probably
of my frustration.
Still awesome. He was so great. People forget how good he was. Late round pick, just worked his butt off. Didn't he start as almost exclusively an unbelievable return man?
Yeah, pretty much. Had to work his way in. It was the old Pittsburgh just churns out great wide receiver talent. He had to wait, basically do an internship for a couple years before he broke out. An incredible story, an incredible player.
Nobody has ever gone like higher on my list of players I love to just a guy that I just get so frustrated by. Grant and Danny on the Fan. Let's talk Chase Young's rookie season next. How do you feel about Young to this point? We can open up the AAA Always On Call listener lines at 800-636-1067. It goes without saying that Chase Young has had a big impact as a rookie and has done some very good things on the defensive line for Washington as the number two pick. But he's got 3.5 sacks, not the end-all, be-all, and some of the impact pressures, you know, the rushes that get home, contact of the quarterback, forced throws for turnovers, have just not been there the last few weeks, not just from him but from the defensive line and overall this season. I would say in terms of counting stats or obvious plays, if you're just waiting for him to make a big play, there have not been nearly as many as you might have anticipated. I've been very pleased with him. I'm thrilled with him having been the number two pick. I think he's going to be great. I still think this guy's going to win Defensive Rookie of the Year. I think he could win Defensive Player of the Year in the next few seasons. I think there's work to do. I think he's got to get a better game plan as a pass rusher, maybe learn a move or two, and he's going to make progress. But just based on his strength alone, he's been good enough that he takes on double teams, that teams have decided they're going to send extra attention to him rather than Montez Sweat or occasionally Ryan Kerrigan or whoever else is rushing. And that speaks volumes about Chase Young. He's the guy that teams all week long kind of prepare for. So as a rookie, that's a big deal. But if you just look at the numbers, Danny, 18 quote-unquote pressures this year total, according to Pro Football Focus, in 202 pass rushes. Montez Sweat has 206, almost the same number of pass rushes, and he's got 29 pressures, 11 more. Now, again, he's facing fewer chips and double teams and slide protections and things like that. He's also got more sacks than Chase Young, 17 hurries for Sweat, 14 for Young. So you just look at some of the numbers, and they're not necessarily there, and I wonder how that's going to influence how people feel about Young at the end of the season, fair or unfair.
Yeah, I mean, this is what I said all along. The terms generational, the terms, you know, the expectations for this guy, not from fans, because they were astronomical, but from members of the media, from people that cover this thing. The hyperbole was outrageous. Here's what he's always been, a really good prospect. He's a good player. I think that it remains unchanged. He is absolutely a good player. I'm glad he's here. He's going to help. He's going to continue to get better. He will start to beat some of these double teams or develop a counter move. Because the idea that the only reason his production hasn't been off the charts is because he's double and triple teamed is not true. He's not always double and triple teamed. He sometimes doesn't beat the guy in front of him. The expectations were so astronomical. He has a half sack more this year than DJ Wonnum. I have no idea who DJ Wonnum is. He was a fourth round pick from Minnesota. The impact that we expected hasn't been there, and the impact that we should have expected absolutely has been. Again, good player, but the expectation was so outrageous, so unrealistic, so comical at times with this guy that he's generational, you can't pass on him. All that was nonsense. This is just a good player who's playing pretty well. So I think people are going to be disappointed, I think, and I don't think that's fair.
Yeah, they're going to be disappointed if he ends up with 6.5, 7.5, 8 sacks, whatever it is. We talked about this before the year. You know, what did we expect? What did he need to do? What would be disappointing? And the numbers came in where someone would say, oh, he needs to have 13 sacks or I'll be disappointed. He needs to have 10 or 11 or 9 sacks or I'll be disappointed. You know, 8, 9 is kind of the range, I think, where a good pass rusher normally gets by the end of the season. But he just gets more attention than certainly any of the rookie pass rushers I've been around, you know, that I've seen. And that makes it probably harder to get to those numbers. I mean, for me, I've seen what I need to see to get it, to understand why people felt the way they did about this guy, to be completely honest with you. I have no problem with the term generational. I have no problem with any of kind of how the people who evaluated him coming out felt about him. Because, you know, if they said he's going to have a generational rookie season statistically, that's wrong. And that was a bad take. And, I'm happy to clobber those people. But the idea that he's different than your normal pass rusher is in their first season, you see it in how he plays the run. You see it, again, in the attention that he gets as a rookie. I mean, in his second game, going back to September, I remember a play, I think it was Albert Breer posted, where he had a double team with a chip. And you're right. I mean, I'm not saying it happens every single down. That nobody gets doubled with a chip every single down. That's too many people in protecting. But for that to have been happening, like in game two, kind of said everything that I needed to know about it. What has been frustrating for me is that hasn't led to more big-time pressures and one-on-one wins, right, and immediate success. Sweat had a huge first half of these nine games and has tapered off a little bit in terms of big plays lately. That's a little bit disappointing to me. You know, the Allen Payne Ioannidis interior, the loss of Ioannidis, obviously huge. He only played 2.5 games. But I would have thought, based on how often we're seeing that attention for Chase Young, that those guys were able to do more than they have. And we talked yesterday about why the pressure isn't always getting home. And
sure,
coordinators
sure
are very obviously saying, this defensive line won't beat us. We're not going to allow that. And that's good. That's smart. That you get paid a lot of money if you're a coordinator to do that. But I'm really happy with Chase Young. What I would like is for him to get a couple of those numbers so that people can see what Washington knows, right? What Del Rio knows, what Rivera knows, what Allen and Kerrigan would tell you if you talk to those guys, that this dude is a beast. I mean, he is a dog. You want him on your side. And without those numbers, it just sounds like I'm just saying something, and that's fine. But people in football will tell you a very different story than the numbers. So I want to see that breakout game so that people start to get that this is for real. This isn't just blowing smoke.
Yeah, the way that happens is with sacks. It just is. And sacks to me are a process.
Sacks for sure, but how about just, you know, a game where you hit the quarterback four times and, like, you're constantly in the backfield. You know what I mean?
And that's
like,
where I was going.
The sacks would be great, but just non-sacks too, where you're obvious, where it's easy for someone to see you in the backfield making a play.
Right. The simplest way is the sacks, but you're right. I mean, to me, this is like a hitter who went 0-for-4 but hit the ball in the screws four times. You know what I mean? Lined out four times. And you just go, where's the batting average? It's coming. Sacks to me are a process thing. I look at pressure percentage, hurries, quarterback knockdowns, and those things haven't really been there either to the same degree.
Yeah, that's the more alarming thing.
Yeah, you look at Montez Sweat, and who's gone into, I guess maybe you call it a slump or, you know, regressed, whatever you want to call it. I don't necessarily care. But he's more than doubled up the next closest guy in terms of QB hits and, you know, tackles for loss. That sort of stuff matters. They add up as you're kind of causing chaos, penetrating, ruining things, blowing plays up. I just want that. I want this world-beating guy that was advertised. And I understand there's more attention being paid to him. So maybe not on that play. But there are plenty of one-on-one times. And those we need more frequent wins in that regard. So there's only – is he forced to fumble once? I need more of those. I just need chaos created by
plays.
This guy. And I think that's something that – sacks come, I think, you know, with when the process is good, right? When there's more and more times you're penetrating, you just happen to get it right when, you know, that's the slower developing play or something like that. And those numbers haven't been there. And I think that's why people, some at least, are disappointed.
Yeah. Now the disappointment I totally understand because, again, it's just impossible in 2020 when you're taking an edge rusher with his resume at number two for the hype train not to leave the station at a speed that is uncatchable. I mean, it's just that's where we are. So I think for me, I'm kind of very comfortable with what he is, where he's at. I have seen now three or four areas where I think he's got to get better. Game plan wise, I'm not really sure if he's got a great game plan on what he's doing. Is he setting a guy up? Is he doing this so he could come back and do something later? I don't see a lot of that. Moves, I'm not sure that there are a bunch of them. The speed, the strength is very obvious. And he has been impactful. I mean, if you're putting together a list of the
absolutely
best players on this team this year, he's in the top five, probably on any list you're going to put together, obviously. But you just want the plays. I want that so that people that are just going to look at those numbers are going to see, wow, Chase Young is having a really good season. And I don't know if just 3.5 sacks, if that's what you're doing, if that's what you're basing it on, is going to get him that attention. And maybe the point is we know better. Like it'd be the equivalent of saying, like, oh, this rookie quarterback, Justin Herbert's record is this. So he's
right,
not having
yeah,
a good
yeah
season. We don't care about win-loss record for quarterbacks, but I just think that there are plays that he's got to make, and at some point the sacks will come. But as you said, the pressures, the quarterback contact, some of those things, you just need to get home more often. G&D on the fan, you can chime in if you want, 800-636-1067. on the AAA Always On Call listener lines. Our quarterbacking awards for the best and the worst of Week 10 next right here on The Fan. Sam Monson of Pro Football Focus at 1 o'clock. The big one at 1 in 10 minutes, Sam Monson of Pro Football Focus. You can ask him about Chase Young's rookie season and how PFF is evaluating Young so far this year. He's been one of their highest graded defensive ends a couple of times, but for the course of the season, I'd be curious to see where they have him now. That's coming up at the top of the hour. Every week on Tuesday, we give out quarterbacking awards, Danny. So it's a gold, silver, and bronze medal to the top three QBs of the weekend. We also give out a Jag of the Week, as requested by our listening audience, for the most pedestrian quarterbacking performance that was. And then we added last week the Dud of the Week, just the worst QB in football this past week. So let's get to it. Why don't you start with your gold medal winner?
He's old, but he's still really, really good. Tom Brady, 341-3, 124 quarterback rating, also plunged in for a touchdown in his own right, one of the best underrated QB sneakers in the history of this game. He was really good throughout the once Ronald Jones ran for 98 yards, Tampa Bay ran away with this game from that moment on. But Tom Brady was good throughout. 341-3, my gold medallion of the week.
I'll go gold medal for another guy who's old but still good. Big Ben Roethlisberger.
Yes, sir.
334 yards, four touchdowns, 27-45 against Cincinnati. That was a game where Pittsburgh didn't even have him on the field at the end of the game. They completely called off their operation midway through because they felt like they'd done enough. I mean, he could have thrown for 400 yards and five or six touchdowns if he wanted to. I'll go gold for him, which means silver for the aforementioned Brady for his 341-3. That was just easy, pitching and catching stuff. 28 of 39, ultra efficient. He gets my silver medal.
Roethlisberger, you touched on it. He is my silver medallion winner. I took quality of opponent into account there. Maybe I shouldn't have. My criteria fluctuates all the time, by the way. I need something consistent to be able to apply that. But anyway, that's what I did that. Roethlisberger, it was easy, as you said. It was just 7-on-7 stuff. He had more incompletions, a lot more, in fact, than Brady did, which maybe kind of held him down a little bit from my gold to a silver, but still excellent week, 333-4. He was outstanding.
Who gets your bronze?
This was a little bit tougher, honestly. There were a lot of middling performances sort of as you go up and down here in terms of who did what over the course of the week. This is going to sound dumb, but it was against a really important game and big and meaningful. I'm going to give it to Jared Goff. Didn't throw for any touchdowns by virtue of the fact that they had a bunch of goal line rushes in that game, an important divisional win versus Seattle. But Jared Goff was efficient, didn't turn it over, didn't do the terrible things that Jared Goff does that undoes the Rams' chances to win the football game. 27 or 37 for 302 in a game that they really needed to get to the top of that division.
Bronze for me goes to Matt Stafford against Washington. 276-3, 24 of 33. The 55-yard and 27-yard touchdowns looming large. I thought Detroit, Matt Patricia paradigm, not great here, kind of took their foot off the gas pedal a little bit. I don't know that Stafford missed a ton of things that were there that ended drives. I think, you know, they got out of whack from how they had built that lead. Washington started stopping the run, and they decided they were just going to run it on the early downs and be behind the sticks, and it caught up to them. But I liked the way Stafford played. My Jag of the Week at quarterback goes to Tua Tagovailoa. Hey. It was 15 of 25 for a 169 with a couple of touchdowns. Now, Tua, I really, really liked his games that I've seen in terms of his accuracy. I think this guy is going to be very, very good. I liked him in the draft because of that accuracy in college at Alabama. But I can tell you that and then speak out of the other side of my mouth and say that we're going to start doing this overrated, like, he's 3-0 thing.
Right.
The Dolphins' special teams are the best special teams unit in football, like scoring every week right now. Their defense has had more touchdowns the last couple of weeks than some of the worst offenses in the league. Again, he threw for a 169 at 15 completions in the game. I'm not going to take anything away from Tua, but it's been pretty easy to be the Dolphins quarterback the last couple of weeks, weirdly enough. So I like what I've seen. I think this is an awesome beginning to his career. He has yet to throw an interception in three games, which is incredible for a young kid. I think this is the start of a very successful long career. But you go back and you look at, like, early Ben Roethlisberger and, you know, early Russell Wilson and some of these
guys. Yeah.
It was caretaking. It was 14 of 24 for 127 and a touchdown, Mark Brunell stuff. That's kind of what Tua did yesterday or Sunday And it's more often than not what they've asked him to do, which is great that they're in that situation. Suddenly they're a pretty good team.
He's making some athletic plays, too, maybe more than I thought he had.
Yeah, running around a little bit.
Yeah, and that's kind of what I've been surprised by. You know how I feel about him. I think he's going to be a star. And you're right, it's not the beginning I thought we would see, but it's certainly a solid one. He's got them in a good spot, and they're fun. They're 6-3. My YAG of the week, Ryan Tannehill. He played in the game. 15 of 27, 147 yards and a touchdown. A quarterback rating of 83.4. Incredibly average. Right on point. On brand. I love it when guys that aren't particularly great, GP, have great runs or great moments, and everybody crowns them, and then they slowly but surely kind of descend back to what they are. And Ryan Tannehill's fine. But let's settle down on him being great and this being the second coming. Ryan Tannehill, fine. Ryan Tannehill, not a star.
Yeah, which is fair. And by the way, guess what happens? A good quarterback in Ryan Tannehill plays really well in a contract year, and you have to pay him. That's what happens around the NFL.
Interesting how that goes, yes.
How about the worst quarterback of the week? Couple of options here, but I'm going to go with the man who threw four picks, Drew Lock, with the Denver Broncos. I did not see his fourth pick. I'll be very, very honest. I saw his first three, and they were all terrible. I say all the time, you know, people just mention interceptions as if everyone is equal. He threw two picks. It's like one was dropped and one was a Hail Mary at the end of the game, and really he threw none that were actually his fault. Drew Lock threw three outrageously bad interceptions. I don't know what the fourth one was. It might have just been like garbage time trying to lead them down the field or something. But that was a stinker, and I could not believe. Every time he trotted back out there as they were down a bunch, I couldn't believe they hadn't gone to ripping. Not because you move on from Lock forever. I still like the guy's potential a little bit as a gunslinger. But in that game, this is not it. You know, at some point you just know that your reliever who can't throw strikes needs to be removed. I couldn't believe they kept Lock in that game for the duration.
Yeah, sometimes you got to go get Trevor Rosenthal out of there because he's a danger.
Right.
So that would have been my answer, so I'll give you another one. How about this game maybe knocking this guy off the MVP podium? Russell Wilson stunk in this game. Lost a fumble, threw two interceptions, quarterback rating of 57 in a divisional game. Now, I know the Rams are good, but Russell Wilson all year long has basically said, I don't care who the opponent is. I don't care what my defense is doing. I'm going to go and win us the game. He didn't do that. He was bad, including a backbreaking interception where he stared down his receiver like he was just learning to play the position. Russell Wilson was bad this week, and not as bad as Drew Lock, but he was pretty darn bad.
Seven turnovers last couple of games.
Not good.
That's one way to find yourself no longer the front runner in the MVP race. With Danny, I'm Grant. You are listening to The Fan. Sam Monson joins us next from Pro Football Focus. We'll get his thoughts on what the MVP ballot should look like. Right now, we'll also talk Chase Young's rookie year with him on G&D.
Football fans, the NFL Draft is almost here, and the free Odyssey app brings you the latest coverage from the biggest sports radio stations across the country. Which players will help your team the most? Who will make a draft day trade? Will they be ready for week one? The local conversations about the team you love. All streaming free right here on the Odyssey app. AUDACY. Download it today.